Australia is proudly one of the countries of the world that has compulsory voting, right? Yeah? Is everyone with me? No, not everyone is. Should we have compulsory voting? Should we do away with it? It's an issue that is set to come up in the new parliament, apparently, because one of the minor party candidates, who will play a critical role, of course, in the new Senate, is advocating for an end to compulsory voting in Australia. His name is David Lionhelm. He's a Liberal Democratic Party senator-elect for New South Wales. He also opposes public funding for political candidates, and he joins us now. David Lionhelm, thank you very much for your time.
Hello.
What's wrong with compulsory voting?
Voting should be a right, and it's not a right if you get fined for not doing it. It's like paying tax. Paying tax is not a right. Paying tax is an obligation. If you don't do it, you get fined. Voting should be a right. It's a democratic right, and there shouldn't be compulsion involved. If you don't want to vote, it's just as much a right not to vote as it is to vote. We think it should be made optional. It's optional in almost every other country of the world. There's very few that have compulsory voting, like Australia, and we don't think it should be compulsory here either.
There's no compulsion in casting a valid vote. There's no compulsion in voting for someone. There's only compulsion, really, in turning up and getting your name crossed off.
I mean, that's just a distinction that I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference. I think the preferable option should be that if you want to stay home and say a plague on all your houses, you should be perfectly entitled to do it. And in fact, that's what happens in plenty of other countries. And what it does is compel the political parties to not only convince you to vote for them, but to vote at all. So it puts the onus on them to say, well, look, this is worthwhile turning out for, and then when you turn out, you vote for us.
Yeah, so, and isn't that exactly the problem that the United States are having, is that so much campaign energy goes into the getting out the vote, and so the politics becomes skewed towards extreme ends of the political spectrum and the base, and the centre kind of gets left alone.
It's a very long bow to say the rest of the world is suffering from extremism and Australia isn't because of compulsory voting.
Oh, really? I don't know about that. You look at Europe and the far-right parties are far more ascendant in Europe than they ever have or would be here. You look at American politics, we've seen the dysfunction that that's currently in. Australian politics, for all the extremism we may have within Australian society, it doesn't show up in our politics, and perhaps compulsory voting is part of that mix.
I'd have to disagree with you. I don't think there's any more extremism in America, for example, than there is here. In fact, I don't think there's any more extremism in most of the world which has compulsory voting than there is here. In fact, I don't think compulsory voting is contributing to lack of extremism here at all. What you end up with, though, is the politician with the nicest smile or the whitest teeth or the eyes that aren't too close together or something like that getting the vote. And from, you know, 10, 20, 30% of the perhaps not that high, 10, 20% of the population, they really don't care, they're not engaged, they're not interested in the issues, they have no interest whatsoever in the outcome, but they're forced to vote. Whereas if you have voluntary voting, people vote because they care, they vote the issues, and as a result you get what people want rather than the one with the nicest smile.
You know, it's interesting, I've had this conversation once with someone who works on behalf of homeless people or people who are struggling with finding housing in, I think it was in Miami. And they made the point to me that compulsory voting was desperately hurting those people because the thing that optional voting did was it empowered those who knew how to play the system. And so that, in the case of Miami, was developers, to the exclusion of people who were powerless and, because they were struggling day to day, weren't engaged in the political system and weren't in a position to assert themselves and assert their voice. And so the political system could more or less leave them behind. What do you think would happen in Australia if we went to optional voting? Which people would ultimately be left behind simply because they're not currently engaged?
Well, I don't think it would make any difference to people being left behind. What it would mean is that political parties would have to convince people to vote at all and then vote for them. And in the end, if people care enough, homeless people, poor people, rich people, middle class people, whatever, if they care enough, they'll vote.
Yeah, but the reality is they don't, because they're in different social circumstances.
Well, the reality is now they turn up and vote for the one with the whitest teeth.
Well, are you suggesting that doesn't happen in, say, the United States?
Not as much, no.
Okay, I guess people will draw their own conclusions about that. I find it interesting, though, that your election to the Senate was in a compulsory voting system. I haven't crunched the numbers. I'm not sure if it's possible to win the Senate, but I would have thought there's at least a question to be asked about whether or not you would have been elected in an optional voting system.
Yeah, I think we have to rise above self-interest, I'd take my chances in a voluntary voting system any time.
Would you take your chances with private funding for political candidates? You want to abolish public funding for those candidates. This is something that, again, to quote the United States example, has been a real problem, that public funding is insufficient and private funding seems to win the day and rich people are ultimately the only people eligible for office.
No, well, I disagree with your summary, but they do have public funding in America, but it's conditional. So you can accept public funding and then that imposes limits on how many donations, what level of donations you can accept. And or you can say, no, we're not going to take public funding, and then you're free from constraints on donations.
And you wouldn't take it because you can get far bigger donations privately, and that's where special interests come to dominate the political process and only rich people can become president.
Is that so?
Yeah, I can't think of anyone who wasn't extremely wealthy becoming president.
And you think that if there was public funding of political parties that would stop?
Well, this is exactly the debate they're having, isn't it? That if you made the funding public and perhaps only public, then you broaden the democratic base.
And how does that democratic, what it does is benefit the incumbents. So you would have parties like mine and all the myriad other small parties never getting a chance because the big guys have basically a closed shop. It's the equivalent of subsidising Coles and Woolworths.
You're going to give your money back?
If it will change the system, we would. But it won't change the system. As I said in an article today, giving it back would be like peeing in a wetsuit. It makes you all nice and warm, but it doesn't change anything. No one notices.
On other issues to do with the way the Senate is currently forming, I'm interested to know, have you been approached by the Palmer United Party to form a bloc or join that bloc that is forming?
No, we weren't. No. In fact, we didn't attend that meeting. I didn't even know about it till it was over with motorist enthusiasts.
And are you keeping an eye on the count in WA, where it seems like a whole bunch of votes seem to have gone missing, in a count that was very, very close?
It is very interesting. In fact, although we're sort of been ruled out by most commentators, in fact, we came very close to winning a seat there ourselves at various choke points, as they're called, where there's very close contest between another party getting knocked out or two parties being knocked out. The Liberal Democrats were in contention right towards the end, and it's not out of the question that those 1,300 votes may swing it in our favour, although I think it's probably unlikely. But it is interesting that 1,300 or so votes have gone astray. I dare say Clive Prahn will be laughing.
Well, yes, and Scott Ludlam might well be watching very, very keenly. In fact, I have no doubt whatsoever that he is. Just before I let you go, I want to pick your brain as a former veterinarian, if I may, because we've seen today footage emerge of Australian sheep being mistreated in the Middle East, which has raised again questions about the live export business, which, of course, we encountered in the previous parliament. That trade was suspended briefly by the previous government. Do you have a view as a former vet of what you've seen?
Mm-hmm. When I was a student, there were all sorts of demonstrations that were undertaken against the Vietnam War, and a lot of them were against American imperialism. And the slogan that was chanted over and over again was "Smash US imperialism." And what it meant was they didn't like American values. They didn't like the idea that America was imposing its values on the rest of the world. Frankly, I think our attitudes to welfare are a bit precious. And for us to be telling other countries how they should slaughter animals that they've purchased from us, they own them, that's property is transferred from us to them, for us to be saying, you have to slaughter them according to our values, I think that's perilously close to cultural imperialism. Yes, there are some things that we could do to convince them not to be totally brutal about it, and I think we should do them. But for us to be stamping our foot saying, you have to do it our way, or we're going to take our bat and ball and go home, I think it's imperialism, and we should not be doing it. When I was a young lad as well, growing up on a farm, my father used to kill sheep for household meat. He didn't stun them. He would tie their legs and cut their throat with a sharp knife. It was all over and done with quite quickly, and that footage that came from Jordan, as far as I could see, dragging sheep around by a leg, that happens in shearing sheds all the time. Cutting their throat with a knife, that's precisely what happens when you kill them for home meat. And some of the kicking and pushing and so forth is unnecessary and obnoxious, and we should be doing what we can to convince people to be kind to animals. But guess what? That sort of thing happens here too. We have to be very careful about how we go holding our nose and saying the rest of the world has got to come up to our standards. The rest of the world doesn't. And there is another aspect to that as well, in that we seem to be far more worried about the welfare of animals in those countries than we are about the welfare of women. They treat women appallingly badly in many of those countries, and yet you never hear a whisper about that.
I don't know about that. We've been talking a lot about that. We had an invasion of Afghanistan, which was sold partly on that entire basis. I wouldn't have thought that conversation is not part of the Australian imagination.
Well, yes, in Afghanistan, that's true. The Taliban were appalling to women, and they probably will be again, and we're bailing out. And who's thinking about the women there?
Oh, I suspect a lot of people are. I mean, I take the broader points you're making, but I think on that specific example, there are counter-examples. But nonetheless, it's been a really interesting conversation. It's going to be a very interesting Senate to watch, and I look forward to your contributions, David. I appreciate your time.
Thanks very much.
David Lionhelm, Liberal Democratic Party Senator-elect for New South Wales. A lot of provocations, shall we call them, for you to respond to. 0418226576, 0418226576, or Twitter at RN Drive.